From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The longest-serving alderman in Chicago history is now an accused felon.
Over the years, there have been ethics probes, allegations of influence peddling, and the overall misuse of public power for personal profit. But who would have ever thought it would come down to something as mundane as a permit for a fast food restaurant?
Burke is accused of using his official power to delay a remodeling project at a fast food restaurant in his ward while soliciting business for his tax law firm, Clafter & Burke.
Authorities say the alleged extortion effort began in 2017 and continued into 2018. During that time, the feds had Burke under surveillance and were recording his phone calls.
Individual C said, "I'll let them know how important you are." Burke said, "Well, you're good to do that, but I'd also like to get some of his law business and get him involved here."
The 75-year-old finance committee chair appeared stoic as he was told he could serve 20 years if convicted.
In a surprising move, Burke addressed the charge as he arrived home last night.
I look forward to trying this case in court. I believe that I'm not guilty of anything. When I have my day in court, that will be clear beyond a reasonable doubt.
Longtime Chicago alderman Ed Burke facing some major legal trouble. We'll discuss that. And also, 2019 means changes to Illinois state government, several new lawmakers, a Democratic governor. We'll look ahead at what the new year might bring in Illinois on this edition of State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor. And joining us, a couple of IPR State House reporters, Daisy Contreras and Jacqueline Driscoll. Well, let's start with the Ed Burke situation, because this was a little bit more breaking news happening on Thursday of this week, Brian. A federal criminal complaint unsealed. Before the holidays, the feds had raided his City Hall office. There was a lot of speculation. Now we're getting some of those details, and what do they show?
Well, the federal government is alleging that Ed Burke, who is chairman of the Finance Committee, he is frequently referred to in stories as a powerful Chicago alderman. It seems like almost a mandatory thing when you're reporting on him that people point that out. Anyways, they say that he has attempted to steer business to his private law firm. He's a works in a law firm that does property tax appeal work. There was a Burger King, it's been reported, although it's just identified as a fast food restaurant, in his Chicago ward that wanted a permit for renovation. He wanted the owners of this, the franchise owners of this Burger King, to hire his law firm to do some property tax work. And, you know, basically was allegedly caught on a cell phone, the federal government says, saying that, or approving one of his employees to sort of put the screws to this company, to, you know, hold up the permits, slow walk their government needs for this renovation they wanted to do in order to, until this firm, you know, hired his, or until this company hired his law firm to do this work.
Now, Charlie, a lot of people, especially outside of Chicago, may not know Ed Burke that well, but this is a player in Chicago politics and has been for a long time.
Yeah, Ed Burke is probably the most powerful person in the Chicago City Council. He's maybe second only to Mayor Rahm Emanuel in terms of influence in Chicago. He's, as was noted in the clip at the beginning of the show, he's the, I believe, the longest serving alderman in Chicago history, 50 years. He also, up until shortly after this accusation from the federal government, he had been chair of the Finance Committee and had kind of unilateral control over millions of dollars. Well, he has since resigned as the chairman at the request or the suggestion of Mayor Emanuel, and now he's looking at a long prison term. And it struck me that he's in a situation where his ward would seem ripe for change, in the sense that the Hispanic population on the southwest side of Chicago in the near suburbs has grown dramatically. His brother in November, Dan Burke, was unseated by a Hispanic challenger, and there are several Hispanics running against Alderman Burke in the upcoming aldermanic elections in Chicago, including one who's been endorsed by Chuy Garcia, so he could well lose his aldermanic spot as well. And he was a throwback, or is a throwback, to the old days when there were a number of very powerful ward committeemen who kind of called the shots. Originally, they were allies of the first Mayor Daley, Richard J. Daley, and then they were the backers who helped push through the agenda of Mayor Daley's son, Richard M. Daley. And so I guess if you look at it, this kind of leaves Mike Madigan as being the last standing of the old guard.
And Brian, before we move on, we'll be talking about this, I'm sure, over the next several weeks and as more information comes out. But I think the one thing that may be catching some people's attention with this even more so is the fact there is a big Chicago mayoral race coming up. And already there's some speculation about how Ed Burke ties into some of the candidates there.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that came out in that the federal government alleges in their complaint is that Burke held a fundraiser for a politician. Turns out that was Tony Preckwinkle. And this owner of this Burger King franchise, which the Tribune reports is the third largest fast food franchisee in the country, holds a bunch of stores, 502 Burger Kings, as well as other stores across the country, that they made a contribution to Preckwinkle's campaign. Now, the Preckwinkle campaign says it did receive the contribution but returned it to the donor right away so quickly that it never actually reported it to the state the way campaigns are supposed to with contributions. But there is some question about that, and it certainly is causing a lot of the opponents to Preckwinkle to sort of seize on this. But I think it is interesting, and a lot of the Chicago media reports played this up, that this targets one person, but you got to imagine that somebody who is as much of a player as Ed Burke is talked to a lot of politicians on their phone, on his phone, and you got to wonder how many people were losing sleep last night thinking back over all the conversations they've had with him during this time period.
And Charlie, we discussed that before the show, even that Ed Burke, his ties to people, you know, pretty deep in Chicago politics. So it's hard to find too many people who don't have some connection to him.
Yeah, well, I guess that would be true. I mean, he was a prolific fundraiser as one of the old guard. He was someone who would help upcoming candidates, people who are struggling to get started. And I would be surprised if there's any of the important figures in Chicago who did not get money from Ed Burke or his campaign committee at one point or other in their careers.
Well, and I would just add here, I think this is, it's interesting, and I've seen some people beginning to make the connection to, and you certainly actually, this I'll say, the state Republican Party put out a press release that didn't mention House Speaker Michael Madigan, but basically the implication was there and says, you know, it's time to end this private property tax law work by politicians. And it is true that Burke's, what his private law firm does is the same thing that House Speaker Michael Madigan's private law firm does. But people have tried for years to find some evidence of corruption on the part of the House Speaker. The Chicago Tribune has done extensive investigations. You've got to imagine the federal government has looked into him, and nothing has come out about that. And I think that when you hear and you read the transcripts of these alleged conversations that Burke was having in this complaint, it's difficult to imagine House Speaker Madigan, who notably does not even own a cellular telephone, having these sorts of conversations. And so I think that we need to be very careful about drawing parallels there, even though some people are already trying to make political hay out of that.
And it occurs to me, this involved his holding up a permit for work in his ward. I think one of the major reforms that the Chicago City Council could do is to do away with this longstanding, going back decades, if not hundreds of years, prerogative of local aldermen to have the final say on zoning and development in their wards. Because it puts them in a position, it's a precarious position in that they can be accused of wrongdoing, even if they hold up a project because they don't think it's a good idea. But it's the kind of power that should not be vested in an individual. Sure, they should have a say with what happens in their wards, but they shouldn't have the control over whether or not a permit is issued.
As I said, we will talk more about that Ed Burke case as we'll follow that and developments over the next several weeks and months. But let's take a look now as we're now in 2019. And Daisy Contreras, we are about to have a new governor take over the state of Illinois. A lot of new lawmakers coming in as well. Most of them are Democrats. And some changes ahead for the state of Illinois and state government.
Yeah, there are many plans. I think a lot of people are, you know, looking forward to maybe putting in a capital plan in place, maybe doing sports betting, marijuana, and maybe raising the minimum wage. For example, for the capital plan, Pritzker campaigned on a promise of a so-called 21st century capital bill that would try to get as much federal money as possible for rail, roads, waterways, rural broadband, and other infrastructure improvements. Of course, that's just federal money. The state needs to come up with a way to get revenue in there. It's been 10 years since we last had a capital bill. And lawmakers from both sides of the aisle understand the importance of getting such capital bill in place. And the question always is, where is that money coming from? So once you find a way to raise that revenue, you can't really use that money anywhere else. And we've talked about how we need to, you know, money for pensions, for covering higher education. So some of the ideas being thrown around are gambling expansion, sports betting as potential options for where the money can come from. And also a potential plan is to raise the gas tax, and which some Republicans are not on board with. So this is definitely something that Pritzker coming in will have to deal with.
Well, you mentioned, and we'll talk more about some of the other things there, but let's stay on capital, the capital idea, which is all those different projects you talked about. And Charlie, in the past, when those have been done, they're looking at ways to raise revenue to pay off bonds. Gas tax, with gas prices as low as they have been, for, you know, comparatively to what we had seen in some recent years, seems like that could be something that gets people's attention. It also hasn't been raised in many years.
Yeah, we've raised gas taxes. I think the last time was, what, 20-some years ago? I don't recall.
Maybe
the
date
exactly.
Or
something. Yeah.
More than that, yeah. The last major program that we had, as Daisy said, was right at the beginning of Quinn's tenure as governor, and it was funded in part by revenues from video gaming, which was just getting off the ground back then. In the past, we've raised license plate fees. We've raised driver's license fees. We've taxed different activities. There's always been a dedicated revenue stream to cover the cost of the bonds. And that was one of the things that was always considered to be necessary to be able to go to the bond market and get a decent rate, in that you can show the bond buyers, here is money that's going to come in, and it's set aside for nothing else other than to pay off the bonds. And it's a steady stream of revenue. It's not a one-time deal like selling the Thompson Center, ha-ha. And that's one of the important factors in figuring it out. I think another factor that's important is there has to be a certain level of trust between the governor and the legislature. And I've mentioned this before. If I'm a lawmaker and I'm going to vote to impose some kind of a tax or some kind of a fee or raise additional money from my taxpayers, I want to be able to say to them, you're going to pay a little more, but that road's going to get paved. Mm-hmm. That high school gym roof is going to get replaced. You're going to get new facilities that you need. That bridge that's fallen apart, we're going to take care of it, so that they know they're going to get something. And for me to be able to say that, I have to trust the chief executive that when he says, Charlie, if you vote for this, we'll do this project in your district, I know he's not going to renege on it.
And that's a lot of the work, Daisy, that has to be done here. 177 members, each one of them wants some guarantees, whether in writing or whether at least verbally. And all of that has to be worked out before something like this could get through.
Yeah, and over the last few weeks, I think we've heard rumors circulating that there would be an effort to try to pass a small capital program during lame duck session next week. But I don't think that's going to happen.
And Brian, one thing that lawmakers love, and I think has been through the years, has been projects. They like to cut ribbons. They like to tell people that they're bringing home the bacon back to the district, and that's something even new lawmakers want to be able to do.
Yeah, you would imagine, although I would guess there's like a loss of muscle memory on how to even do that, because, as we've said, Illinois has not had this sort of thing in a long time. But It's certainly one of the ways that a legislator can distinguish him or herself in their district. It can also lead to some interesting stories and some people getting in trouble, too. I believe we had the famed House Music Festival in Chicago. Not famed. That was sarcastic. That was part of one of these spending bills in the mid-aughts. So, sometimes you get some questionable expenditures, but it is something that legislators like to see.
Well, along the lines of that, probably the most notable was when George Ryan, in his first year, put through the Illinois First program, and it involved an increase in alcohol taxes and an increase in license plate fees. And lawmakers were given what came to be known as member initiatives. They were given a lump sum that they could allocate in their district however they wanted.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, and some of it was because at the time I had a friend who worked for the agency that was administering a lot of this stuff, the forerunner of the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and there'd be an appropriation line item like $20,000 to fix the playground at St. Mary's School. And they're scratching their heads. Which St. Mary's school? How many St. Mary's grade schools might there be in the state of Illinois? Or there would be $20,000 to some heretofore unheard of social service agency to do whatever. And as a matter of fact, a lot of that money never got spent initially, which would have been in fiscal 2000, and it just kept getting carried over and reappropriated. And some of those reappropriations are still around. If you were to look at the most recent budget, you would find under the DCEO appropriation all kinds of projects. The most recent one I looked at was from, I think, a year or two ago, and there were something like 100 pages of these projects that had been reappropriated over time.
And as we want to think that these are all very needed programs, but sometimes obviously statues get put into that, questionable things quite often. So we'll watch that and see if that comes up as well. One of the things that Daisy mentioned, of course, was the possibility that recreational marijuana could become legal in the state of Illinois. There seems to be a big push among not just J.B. Pritzker, the governor, but several interest groups and many lawmakers as well. It looks like it's being almost fast-tracked here. Are we reading that correctly, Jacqueline Driscoll? You've been covering this.
Definitely. There will be a bill introduced early in session, I'm told, by the Democratic sponsors, State Senator Heather Staines and House Representative Kelly Cassidy, both Democrats from Chicago. But they don't have many of the details worked out, which, as speaking with Representative Cassidy, the devil is in the details to get more people on board. This definitely is not a slam dunk. They don't have all Democratic support. They have some Republican support. It is bipartisan, but not everyone is on board. They do still have a lot of work to do. But the main questions are how it will be taxed. Obviously, generating revenue, that will be very important, and where that tax money will go, because that has not been decided yet. They've mentioned possibly substance abuse programs, law enforcement efforts, education from the Department of Public Health to make sure that teens know that they should not be using marijuana, despite this being an adult use program. They still want that education out there. They've also mentioned maybe some of it going in the general revenue fund to pay down some of our pension debt or other expenses. But they also can't tax it too much. Otherwise, they're worried that might keep people on the black market. So it's definitely tricky, and they have a lot of work to do before it's passed.
And when it comes to that money, that tax revenue coming in, the estimates have been pretty wide-ranging.
Definitely. We've heard as low as $350 million up to $1 billion. So very wide range. But again, that might be they don't know how it's going to be taxed yet. So
how big of a deal is it that Michigan is moving ahead with a program, and we don't know exactly when that's going to be online, I guess, but it's coming. It's coming in. Michigan's probably coming in many other states nearby as well. But now that it's moving into the Midwest, not just, California, crazy California doing something like that, it's moving closer to Illinois. How big of a deal is that, and how does that impact what could happen here in the state?
I think it shows that the culture and the climate around marijuana as a whole is changing. If it's moving into the Midwest, Michigan, in fact, they did it by referendum on their ballot, and they actually have rules written in place that lawmakers do have a year before they get a program up and running. But our governor-elect, J.B. Pritzker, thinks that, it's very important. And, you know, we should be hit the ground running and we should beat Michigan. I don't know how big of a deal that is if we beat Michigan to sales or not, whether it's a couple months or so. But despite J.B. Pritzker saying that, I do think the lawmakers who are at the table negotiating this do want to make sure that they're doing it right. They've mentioned that they do believe that our medicinal marijuana program, it's very tightly regulated, and they want to do the same for recreational if it were to pass.
Okay, legalizing sports betting. We might as well just go for it. Marijuana, sports betting, all this. Daisy, why is this even coming up here for so long? That's been, you know, prohibited, but why now could Illinois and many other states go this route?
Yeah, so last year the U.S. Supreme Court allowed sports betting outside of Nevada, giving individual states the opportunity, like you said, Sean, to kind of set their own rules, and several states have already jumped on that opportunity. So over the last few months, discussions have ramped up here in Illinois, not only for sports betting, but also for other gambling expansion ideas. And legislators have been holding special hearings on the topics to try to get everyone on the same page. The lead lawmaker on the sports betting bill is Democratic Representative Lou Lang, who says he's taking his time to draft the bill. He's already been working on it, but he has different drafts going on. He just wants to make sure he's receiving input from all stakeholders, especially from those that in the past have not supported the idea of gambling expansion proposals like casino and racetrack owners. And he has also warned that even though the proposal could help generate growth opportunities for the state, it isn't the solution to the state's fiscal issues. So he estimates anywhere from $50 to $150 million annually in revenue, which is something, but not enough to cover a lot of the expenses that we have as a state. And J.B. Pritzker has thrown out there that this could be an option to cover his capital plan.
Well, let me ask on this, because sports betting, you know, people think of, okay, somebody calls their bookie up on the phone, whatever. How would this actually work? I mean, as far as, would you be able to go to your cell phone? Would it be something like that where you'd be able to do it over the internet? Or is there, you know, it's not like off-track betting where you have to go to a certain location?
Yeah, it would be regulated online. So different stakeholders, companies that make sure that it's not going over state lines. You know, for states that already do this, outside companies, tech companies have been coming in to make sure it's regulated, that that the person who's betting on a sport is within state boundaries, where the and these regulations are going to be different across state lines as well. So yeah, it would be online, and depending on how each state wants to do it.
And Charlie, one thing I'm hearing from all of this is, and I think Jacqueline mentioned briefly, at least, that some of this money could go toward, you know, helping with the pension debt, helping with some of the state's costs and such. But a lot of this is new spending. So all this discussion about all these things that can be done to help the state's budget situation, we are talking about adding more spending rather than necessarily taking care of some of the bills we already have, it seems to me.
Well, it depends on how you want to look at it. For example, you could take the money generated by the let's say we legalize sports betting, we work out all the fine details, and we get, what did you say, Daisy, maybe 50 million?
150. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you use the old rule of thumb, 50 million in annual revenue would support like 500 million in borrowing. And so that would be a good start for a capital program. So you could create it and dedicate the revenue to a capital program. And the same with the marijuana. And that wouldn't solve your other budget problems, but it would provide a capital program that should be popular with lawmakers. It's popular with the business community because there's contracts involved, work for the contractors and their suppliers. It's popular with organized labor because there are jobs involved. It's sort of like a win-win situation, and heaven knows the state really needs infrastructure work, not just on roads and bridges, but also on replacing some of its mass transit equipment, school construction needs. Here in Sangamon County, we approved an additional sales tax in the November election to be used for school building purposes. So the need is there, and so it's not going to solve our pension program, but nothing's going to solve the pension liability in one fell swoop. But if we were to dedicate this revenue to the infrastructure, that would create economic activity, that would generate sales taxes, that would generate income taxes, and that would boost our overall bottom line.
And Brian, just a few seconds before we move on here, but your thoughts on this as far as, I know the governor does have some ideas to raise revenue that would be more structural for, you know, dealing with the state's structural deficit, things like that. Again, he's got to get some of this through the legislature, though.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking about a progressive or graduated income tax there, but that takes 2 years before that would have to be approved by voters at the next general election. So, I mean, that money would not start coming in for a few years from now. And there are still deficits for the current year. Now, it's good that revenues have been tax revenues have been going higher, and there was a strong Christmas season, we just learned, in terms of sales tax receipts to the state of Illinois. So there are some positive signs, but Illinois still has a lot of budgetary pressures and challenges in the years ahead. So some analyses have shown that Governor-elect Pritzker has promised, depending on how you add up the cost of his proposals, far more than he has proposed in terms of new revenue so far.
Okay, let's move to our notes from the field. Charlie, I'll start with you.
All right, well, we were talking about revenue, and the results for the first 6 months of FY 2019 are in. And on the one hand, the state's tax collections, well, the overall general fund's revenues are down by almost $1 billion. But if you factor out the fact that we had extraordinary in excess of $3 billion of federal reimbursement for Medicaid because of the bonds that we sold to retire some of the old Medicaid bills, the main sources, the personal and corporate income taxes and the sales taxes, are up $1.2 billion over the similar collections a year ago. And the flash index from the Institute of Government Public Affairs at the U of I, Professor Fred Geertz, shows that the index reached 105.5 in December, up 0.2 of a point from the November reading, and a 34-month high. So the index ended 2018 at its highest point since February of 2016, and the professor says that the economy is still growing at a slower pace, and our per capita income growth over the last four quarters exceeded the national average, and we ranked 11th among the states.
Okay. Jacqueline?
The proposed rules for industrial hemp have been published. They have now entered a 45-day comment period before they will be considered by JCAR, the rulemaking committee. There could be a second comment period, but moving along there.
Okay. Brian?
There was an announcement, two interesting things related to the State Department of Corrections, the state prison system, this week. One, the state has agreed to settle a lawsuit that dates back to 2010, alleging that the state has been providing unconstitutionally poor health care to inmates. One study sampled a number of deaths and found that 1 in 3 should have been medically preventable. And also, we saw the continuing trend of crime going down in Illinois, and that has led to a drop in the prison population, crossing the mark of going below 40,000 inmates for the first time since 1997.
Okay. And Daisy.
The partial government shutdown is affecting all National Park Service sites across the country. Here in Illinois, we have two of these sites, the Lincoln Home in Springfield and the Pullman National Monument in Chicago, that remain closed to the public. Local tourism groups are not too worried this will impact many visitors, since this isn't a peak tourist season. But these groups do want to emphasize that it is only the Lincoln Home and the Visitor Center that are closed, and that other Lincoln-related attractions are still open in town, so most of which are run by the state and not affected by the shutdown.
Okay, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Jacqueline Driscoll. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also on NPR One. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.